Cella luna, mezza mare, mamma mia, mamma dare. Figli mia a cutterare, mamma mia, pensaccia tu. Se te non ne avresti a ullo, io te va, io te viene sempre a baccalare dal mare bene. Se ci picchia bande se a baccalare, picchia me.
Hi, this is Gerald Celente. That was Louis Prima. C'è la luna, mezza mare. This is this week's trends this week. And boy, boy, a lot going on since last week. Whew. And, you know, of course, the big news is what happened in Paris last Friday. What didn't make much of the news was just earlier, a day or two before, some 43 innocent people in Lebanon, in a marketplace, you know, just a regular retail area, were blown to pieces by suicide bombers or just bombers. But that didn't make much news. But what happened in France, of course, is international news. And we just sent out a trend alert today and explaining how we see it. And the headline reads, Terrorism, Face the Facts or Face World War III. And if you go to our website, trendsresearch.com, and you go to the Trends Journal page, you'll see that the cover of the Trends Journal, which went out, of course, before the bombing in France, it's about peace. It's about the destruction of Syria. That's the cover. The guy, this fella holding a little dead girl, has just been blown to pieces. And now, of course, there's just more war talk going on. Current events form future trends. It's about cause and effect. And absent from the entire media spectrum are the causes of this mayhem that's now spreading around the world. And the simpletons are simply blaming it on ISIS and those evildoers. And no one's looking at France's, the United States, the Arab League, and America's coalitions that have caused these problems. Not a peep about an estimated, a number just came out yesterday, that over 1 million Iraqis have been killed since George Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, up and down the line. And Congress, of course, voted the majority for the war against Iraq based on lies. Saddam Hussein never had weapons of mass destruction nor ties to Al-Qaeda. Yet over 1 million people dead, their countries destroyed. You think it sets the climate and conditions for what's being called radicalism or revenge after their lives and loved ones have been destroyed? Not a peep in the media about it. Nothing. Zero. Is anybody talking about the years since 2011, since France, the United States, and the Arab League have funded and armed these Islamic militants to overthrow the government of Assad? Whether or not people call him a dictator. You know, I had friends that lived there, two doctors, and they had a great life. And now they're in Canada. Their city's been destroyed by those moderate rebels. So if Assad was a dictator, it's none of our business. And who is France to talk about Assad being a dictator when they occupied that country from the end of World War I to the end of World War II, murdered hundreds of thousands in their imperialistic trip. Oh, you forgot what they did in... Oh, that wasn't too long ago, was Algeria. Yeah. And these people have the nerve to talk about what other people are doing? How about minding your own business? Staying at home? Fixing your own country? As your unemployment rate's going over 10% and there's barely any growth. And attacking, they can't get over the colonial trip. So no one's talking about a little sentence that was said on BEM television, French station, from one of the witnesses. They heard one of the terrorists shout, "What you are doing in Syria, you are going to pay for it now." But that's ignored. Instead, you heard from the French foreign minister, Fabius, say that the strikes were against French values and the French way of life. He said, quote, "What they do not accept is, it is not our actions, it is what we are. And they don't accept the fact that we dance." Meaning that's why they attacked that club. This is coming out of the mouth of an adult? You think they're all uptight and want to attack France because you're dancing? Could it possibly, just possibly be France's foreign policy? The financial and military support for Sunni Islamic militants by France and the U.S. and the Arab League to overthrow the Syrian government that has resulted in the death of over 250,000 Syrians? This was not like this before the United States and its coalition of the killing. Oh, led by, I forgot, Hillary Clinton. Assad has to go. Yeah, go back, Google it up. Watch her on ABC TV back in 2011. Obama, Assad has to go. Yeah, Assad has to go. 11 million Syrians are displaced and 4 million of them had to go. They went to other countries. Who are these people that are dictating what should be done in another nation and calling the person running it a dictator while they're dictating? Can anybody add this up? How could anybody be so lame as to believe this cheap line by Fabius? But it really is just one cheap line after another. And everybody yells and screams and waves the flags. Following 9/11, for example, the explanation for the terrorist strikes on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon had nothing to do with America's Middle East policy. No, not a thing. You know why they attacked us? Well, according to President George W. Bush, he said, quote, "America was targeted for attack because we're the brightest beacon for freedom and opportunity. And the people that attacked us were, quote, enemies of freedom." And everybody cheered. And they believed those lines. Nah, couldn't be because of all the people that Clinton slaughtered in Iraq. Remember, Bush just got into office. Yeah, go back, Google it up. CBS, 60 Minutes, Madeleine Albright, Secretary of State under Clinton. On CBS, 60 Minutes, asked by Leslie Stahl, "Was the death of 500,000 Iraqi children under the age of 5 because of the sanctions imposed by the United States worth the price? They couldn't get food and medical supplies." Madeleine Albright says, yes, it was worth the price. So no, they hate us for our freedom. Not because we're destroying their lives. You forgot all those no-fly zones and bombs away over Baghdad under Bush? The wars launched in Bosnia and Serbia, under Clinton? The wars launched under Clinton in Bosnia and Serbia? What's going on in Israel with the destruction of the Palestinians? And the support of it? United States money going to support it? Oh, I forgot. How about it supporting the dictators over there? You don't call the kings dictators. They is good dictators. They is kings. Yeah, the Wahhabis. They're the ones that launched this. It's a Shia-Sunni war. And they launched it against the Shia Alawites in Syria. So the hypocrisy just keeps going on, and no one's addressing the causes. You look at the presidential reality show debate a week ago, and you had Marco Rubio shooting his mouth off. He said the terrorists hate us, quote, because our girls go to school. They hate us because women drive in the United States. And the crowd cheers. One stupid line after another has nothing to do with the mass murder of over a million people caused by the United States in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Syria, in Libya, and now in Yemen. Doesn't even make the news. Hey, Obama signed a nice deal with that dictator king over there in Saudi Arabia for more armaments. Yeah, smart bombs to bomb the Yemenis. Over 7,000 of them dead since the Saudis launched the war against Yemen. Yemenis didn't do anything to Saudi Arabia. They didn't do anything to anybody. What's going on in their country is their business. No, it's not. Because the United States is involved in that too. As we the people are. Selling them the armaments, the United States military supplying reconnaissance, intelligence, and refueling capabilities so that the Saudis could bomb away over Yemen, and not a peep from the prostitutes about it. I wonder why they hate us. I know why. How can I forget? Rubio said it. Because, quote, our girls go to school and they hate us because women drive in the United States. Hey, Marco, a junior, a fat mouth. They don't allow them to drive in Saudi Arabia. And that's the ones you're always talking about that are great allies. The women have no rights over there, hypocrite little boy, like the rest of you out there. And listen to Trump trumpeting it out. Yep. You know what he's going to do? I'm going to bomb the shit out of him. Hey, don't blame me for saying that word. It's all over the media. But then one day he said, we can't find them. They're sneaky. They don't wear uniforms. They sneak around corners and hide under tables. I'm not making that line up. That's what he said. So Trump, if they're sneaking around corners and hiding under tables, how are you going to bomb the shit out of them? No one's talking about the cause and effect. Here's a line I made up. It was either me or a guy named Luke, I forget. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Of course, I didn't make it up. It goes back into biblical times. Can anybody figure this out? Or to make it more simple, payback's a bitch. If I lived in Iraq, if I lived in Libya, Yemen, Syria, Afghanistan, and foreigners came into my country and killed everybody I love, and destroyed my country, you think I'd want to seek revenge? Would you? So that's what's going on. And now it's ramping up. And they're leading us to World War III. Not a peep from the prostitutes about peace. Zero, nada, nothing. Nothing. All they're doing is trumpeting more war. So that's on the geopolitical side. Now on to economics. There is no recovery. You just saw what just happened. Some numbers came out from Japan. Their GDP down again this last quarter by 0.8%. That's despite trillions and trillions of dollars or yen pumped in through their quantitative easing scheme called Abenomics. So, it's the same thing everywhere. Eurozone, United States, you're seeing the numbers coming out in retail sales, industrial production. Despite the unprecedented trillions of dollars in quantitative easing, the only people that made rich were the already rich and made the biggers bigger. The too big to fail have become much bigger, and the gap between the rich and the poor has grown much wider. There is no recovery. So what's going to happen? Well, today, of course, we're going to read the Fed minutes and whether or not they're going to be raising interest rates in December. And you already can see the impact of it. You're seeing emerging market currencies go lower. Take a look at the euro. It's down to about $1.06 against the dollar now. They're looking for it to reach parity. The point being, the higher interest rates go in the United States, the more pressure of foreign currencies to go lower. Now, let's add on some other factors onto that. You're looking at commodity prices hitting new lows, six-year lows and multi-year lows. For example, you have all these resource-rich nations that became much richer when the Federal Reserve was pushing out quantitative easing, and all that hot money, because you could borrow it really cheap in dollars, was going into these foreign countries, and they were loaning that money to banks and businesses and to the nations to keep building their economies in these emerging markets. At the same time, China had their quantitative easing programs going on, and they were building a bubble economy. So as the bubble economies keep growing bigger, these emerging markets kept exporting more product, both finished product and raw materials. And now they're not. Well, the developed nations, of course, were exporting more finished products, such as Germany, throughout Europe, the United States, other countries. And Brazil and Norway, and Chile, Bolivia, Colombia, Congo, Ghana, Algeria, Nigeria, Niger, all exporting raw materials into China. Now the Chinese bubble is deflating. Interest rates are going up. Their currencies are going down. And they have to pay back this money that they borrowed in dollars. So as interest rates go up, the dollar becomes stronger. Their currencies grow weaker. They have tens of trillions of dollars worth of debt that they've built up that they now have to pay back with devalued currencies at a time when commodity prices are going down, and what they're selling less of and getting less money for it. So we're set up for a bubble burst. I still believe the odds of it happening before the end of this year are better than even. I would have thought it would have happened already. But they keep coming up with these schemes undreamed of, such as negative interest rates, which we're going to start seeing coming out of Europe as the European Central Bank meets early in December. Because the Eurozone has not recovered. You're still looking at massive unemployment, Youth unemployment in places like Greece at 40%, Italy in the 30% range, Portugal. And then you start overlapping what's going on now with the geopolitical scene, with all of these refugees fleeing the countries that the United States and its coalition of the killing have destroyed, rushing into Europe at a time when their economies are sinking. You think there's going to be any problems? You think it's going to add more pressure? But as soon as they start ratcheting up the war talk, poof, all eyes and ears are off the economy. It's all connected. By the way, that's our system called Globalnomics. All things are connected, like the blood which unites us all. And again, the New Trends Journal's out. You can get a preview of it in by going to trendsresearch.com, trendsresearch.com, guaranteed. It's going to put you on top of the news, ahead of the trends, the only place you're going to read history before it happens. And there's a great, great column in there by Gary Null about what's going on and how they're holding back integrative and complementary medicine and natural healing and pushing more big pharma and big ag down our throats and into our bodies, and what to do to actually seize the opportunities as they keep moving in one direction and the trend lines opening up in another. And of course, I don't have to tell you about Gary Null if you're listening to Progressive Radio. You know where he's coming from and the way he looks at things and what he's doing. But there's a great, insightful article in this Trends Journal by Gary Null. Another great story in there by Nomi Prinz, who wrote the award-winning book, All the President's Bankers, and talks about bankism and how it's holding us all back and what it's doing. And, of course, there are many other articles in there, too, by me and talking about how we see the economies unfolding globally, nationally, the opportunities to seize and the dangers to avoid. More, of course, about millennials and many other trends. But again, it all ties together. It's very important to see what's going on now and looking at it objectively. It's up to us individually to see what's going on. It's about we, not me, not you. And of course, in everything I say and everything we write, always remember the motto of the Trends Journal, taught to me by my dear father, may his soul rest in peace. When I was a little kid, every time I'd be shooting my mouth off and I didn't know what I was talking about, he'd look at me in an Italian, he'd say to me, Papagallo, parrot, stop repeating what everybody else is saying and think for yourself. And so that's what the Trends Journal is. It's about thinking for yourself. And it's as these world events are unfolding in front of us now in this horrific way, it's about thinking for yourself. Listen to the CIA director, Brennan. Listen to all the people, the prostitutes of putting on the media about how they have to rob more of our constitutional rights to protect us against terror. All of what you read, the people, the intelligence in France knew about the people who allegedly committed these acts. By having more intelligence wasn't going to stop them. You do not need the internet to murder people. This is a big hoax that they're using to rob us of more of our constitutional rights. And it's becoming very effective because when all else fails, they take you to war. And that's what they're taking us to, because the global economies are failing. And they're going to keep using this these terror strikes to rob us of more of our rights. But again, wait, 43 innocent people, women, men, children in Beirut were killed. They don't count for one French person. 6,000 Yemenis, they're not even worth one sentence in the news. But when there's a terrorist strike in a Western nation, then it's a call to war. But nobody mentions who started the wars. Go back again. All the facts are there. And no, little boys and girls, they don't hate us because our girls go to school, our women drive cars, and of course, because they don't accept the fact that we dance. You can't make this stuff up, but psychopaths and sociopaths can, and that's who's in charge in a country near you. So again, it's up to us to change the course and to enlighten people. And I mean that us, I mean you. We. As Samuel Adams says, or said, it does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men. And freedom and peace are being axed out of the media. They're blacklisted. Those words are being blacklisted from the media. No peace, no freedom, no joy, no beauty. Only more police, only more military, only more intelligence. Intelligence. It's an oxymoron when it comes from the morons in charge. All the intelligence that they have is not going to stop terror strikes. The only thing, as I see, that's going to stop it is peace and prosperity. Mind your own business. Fix Detroit. Fix Camden. Fix Utica and Syracuse. Fix the Rust Belt. Build economies. Build beauty. Build art and stop building bombs and destroying people. So that's the way we see the trend shaping up this week. It's a big one. And again, spread the message of peace and awareness. Put the facts on the table rather than the BS coming from the mainstream media. Again, not one of them is writing about what we've sent out in our trend alert. And that's in our trends journal. None of them are saying, and here's the end of it, the trend forecast. If the causes and effects of foreign policy doing to others as you would have them do unto you are not truthfully examined, the war on terror will escalate into World War III. And now, as we move on, and there's trends this week. We have a special guest who's special to everybody. And that's Gary Null. And he's going to be calling in soon. Is he on yet?
Hi, Gerald.
Hey, Gary.
I would add something you just said, that when we take a look at what's happening today, for those of us who are old enough to remember Pol Pot, he is a good example of what happens when you create the very thing that you then must go in and later fight that didn't exist before. And when you look back at President Richard Nixon's orders for a massive bombing campaign in Cambodia in 1969, Henry Kissinger said anything that flies on everything that moves would be bombed. Well, imagine now that Barack Obama is in his waging his seventh war against Muslims since he was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, and the President of France promises a merciless attack on that ruined country the orchestrated hysteria and lies that you challenge in the Trends Journal. But then take a look at what happened. It was a small band that was under Pol Pot in his Khmer Rouge, and they only had about 5,000. And because of the bombing, and because of 500,000 to 700,000 killed in Cambodia, that's according to the Finnish government commission, that they said 600,000 Cambodians died in the ensuing civil war, and describing the bombings that happened that were secret bombings as the first stage in a decade of genocide. And it was only because of that that the Khmer Rouge and Pol Pot were able to use that destruction of Cambodia and its civilians put into terror and made homeless, because we were bombing villages day after day, including the same villages. We dropped three times the amount of bombs on on Cambodia as would have been the effects of Hiroshima. And these were defenseless people. They were not an enemy of us at all. These were farmers. These were rural people. And that led the Khmer Rouge to grow from 5,000 with no leadership to 200,000, and they in turn caused the destruction of approximately 2.3 million of their own citizens. Now, visualize that there was no ISIS until the bombing campaigns and the destabilization of the infrastructure in Iraq. And then you start to appreciate, well, what come from that? When you are taking an Arab family, and you have to distinguish between an Arab family and a Persian family. You have to know the difference between the two to know the difference in the culture. You have to understand the difference in the Shia versus the Sunni. And you have illiterates on television. You had the Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity's, and the little goofball comedian Mark Levin, who will proclaim, you know, that these are all the enemy. Well, they're not. Shias make up only 15% of all Muslims. 75% of those live in only four countries, Iran, Pakistan, Iraq, and India. None of these nations have Arab majorities, and instead of more Persian descent and influence except for India. What became Pakistan was a region of India that already was largely a Persian descent. But only Iran has a centuries-old legacy of being Shia-ruled, religiously so, and more recently, Iraq, with about 65 to 70% Shia. So Syria is the only country, I repeat, the only country where Shia minority rules in the world. And its Shia population is only 13%, but includes a combination of three different Shia sects, the Twelvera Shia, the primary sect, and the Ismaili, and the Alawi, which is Assad's background. And Syria also has a thoroughly secular a government of influence that does not allow religious law as the authority. In fact, it allows no religious law. So they're not a theocracy, as Iran is, and as Saudi Arabia is, and as many other countries, including Bahrain is, and as the United Emirates are, and Qatar is. So on the one hand, the average American listening to mainstream media and not your show here on Progressive Radio Net and not reading your Trends Journal wouldn't know any of this. When we went into Iraq, the 75% of the population in Iraq, or 70% approximately, were Shia. But they had learned to live with the Sunni in a peaceful way. In fact, they have lots of intermarriages. And we upset all that. We funded the Shia against the Sunni, which caused the Sunni to be disruptive of their lifestyles. We then caused a vacuum, and into this vacuum of the bombing, of the war that we created and furthered, then in comes Saudi Arabia. By the way, Saudi Arabia is between 10 to 15% of Shia, but it's ruled by heretics who are Wahhabists. You have Turkey, Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, Afghanistan, Nigeria, and Albania all have Shia minorities, between 30% up to around 30%. But you wouldn't know it, because we made everyone believe that they're all the same, that a Shia and a Sunni are the same. They're not. Shias believe in a line of imams who carry Muhammad's bloodline. There were 12 imams, the last one having gone into hiding in another dimension, yet still on the planet, what Shias called the occultation. And since Sunnis have attempted to wipe out any special authority given to this bloodline, going back to Muhammad's son-in-law, Ali, who was assassinated while performing prayers, every imam except the last was either killed in battle or against Sunnis or poisoned. 9 of the 12 were. And despite its 1,000 years of persecution against under Sunni authority, Shias condone a practice that is known as taqwiyah, which permits a Shia believer to renounce Islam in his word in order to conceal his or her actual Shia identity while still holding faith in the heart. Now, imagine that the ISIS goes into an area and asks people, what do you believe in? Give us your prayer. If you can't answer that, they'll kill you right on the spot. That's why it's protected some. And we hear the word jihad spoken constantly and refer to Muslim terrorists as jihadists. Well, among Sunnis, jihad is sometimes regarded as the sixth pillar to be included among the five pillars mentioned in the Quran. For Shias, jihad is a lesser practice and considered a low priority and is only limited for protected oneself and family and community in their immediate geography. Full jihad can only be proclaimed by the imam, and as we see, the 12th imam is in mystical hiding. And even Ayatollah Khomeini, leader of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, wrote a treatise called The Greater Jihad. But as with most Shia texts, jihad is almost always associated with the personal struggle of a person undergoing a battle of the egos and sins. It's metaphorical. The only call for Shia jihad was when Iraq, supported by the U.S., attacked Iran. And Khomeini declared it jihad because this was to protect the Iranians' homeland. Mind you, it wasn't Iran who attacked Iraq. It was Iraq with U.S. behind it and weapons, including chemical weapons of mass destruction, the poison gases that came from Great Britain and America, that killed over 1 million Iranians. Now, the question is, when was the last time Iran invaded a country? 300 years ago. When was the last time the United States invaded a country? Well, we're currently in seven wars with Muslim countries, but we're also having footprints in over 900 different military bases. So even how they view the Quran and Hadith are different. Shias view the Quran are more mystical and throughout history, Shias have interpreted the Quran more allegorically, whereas Sunnis have traditionally interpreted it more literally. View a Sunni much like a radicalized Christian, you know, a person that believes that every word of the Bible is absolute. So for a long time, Shias believed that the physical Quran used by Muslims today had distortions and additions and omissions, and the same view Muslims have toward the Bible, both Old and New Testaments. In the Quran, it states that one reason why God revealed a new book because of the distortions that occurred in the divinely revealed descriptions of Judaism and Christianity. Nevertheless, Islam recognizes these other scriptures as divinely revealed. Shias don't follow many of the Sunni collections of Hadith, the sayings of Muhammad, because they don't trust their Sunni sources. Therefore, they rely on a much larger collection of sayings that include those of the imams. So until you have an intelligent conversation about who's actually fighting whom, what is their background, what is their belief, how does this impact how they will go forward, can they resolve their own issues brought to a table? The answer is yes. Those who espouse peace within the Sunni belief and in the Shia belief can. Those who espouse radical jihad cannot. So we should not be involved in making their countries what we believe is our view of what Islam should be. We have no right to do that. It would be no different than if they came to our country and told us what our views of Christianity should be and how we should live our lives, how we should worship, how we should live in a domesticated environment. No one would do that to us. We wouldn't allow it. And yet we assume this idea of divine providence, of the dominant theophany that existed in the 14th, 15th, 16th century, of that any place we intervene, it's on God's behalf, and we are right, and everyone else is wrong. So until we get it straight by what the beliefs are and who should be discussing it, there will only be more meaningless attacks like the French president that hit a soccer stadium, that hit a hospital, that hit a health clinic, and hit a school, and hit a stadium, but didn't hit any enemy combatants. So what was the point of it? Expressing anger? Okay, so you were angry. Now won't you express something that shows logic and reason? That's all I had to say on that.
Well, that's a great overview of what's going on and really the details behind it that you don't hear anywhere. And the other thing, Gary, that Americans don't want to admit or conveniently forget is that ISIS and these other Islamic jihadist groups such as al-Nusra and that have been very active in trying to topple the government of Syria, I mean, these have been supported by the United States and the Arab League, as they did with Libya to overthrow Gaddafi. And people are forgetting as well in Afghanistan, who was the guy that began the Mujahideen to overthrow and get rid of the Russians out of Afghanistan. That began with Jimmy Carter.
And a man named Charlie Wilson.
And, of course, that was the Mujahideen. That was, at that time, I believe there was a guy named Bin Laden that we were funding to make that happen, a Saudi, from Saudi lineage. And, yeah. And people forget this, that the United States creates these groups. And then when, you know, they start turning on us or other people, then they're terrorists. But they're allies when you need them and create them. And again, no one, there's not a peep in the media about the background of any of this and who's behind it. All they're doing is calling for more war. And even the Washington Post yesterday, they had an editorial calling for more deployment of special forces troops in Syria and to have safe zones and to overthrow Assad. I mean, this is against everything this country was founded upon. But yet now it's become, the abnormal has become the new normal. Just as the abnormal, by the way, and again, connecting things with the finances and the economy, the abnormal to have zero interest rate policy. And now they're talking about trying to make it normal. So they create these abnormal conditions, abnormal in quantitative easing. And now they try to create a more normal condition. So what they're doing is they're making the abnormal and trying to pass it off as normal by the United States going into these countries. And here's the deal, Gary. Show me, could anybody show me a success from the foreign policy? Could anybody?
Yes, the armaments industry. It's $50 billion, $50 billion. And let me show you two examples of absolute what I call gutter hypocrisy. Bernie Sanders, who is a democratic socialist, not a true socialist, and Hillary Clinton both saying how they would fight the war against ISIS by engaging, and Bernie was very emphatic about this, getting Saudi Arabia, our great ally, in there and let them help lead this whole thing. And then I have this question for both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, and I think it's a legitimate question. Based upon both of your lifestyles, how would you end up being treated in Saudi Arabia? Well, Bernie Sanders is an openly gay politician. That's fine. I support gay rights, absolutely. But in Saudi Arabia, they behead or stone to death homosexuals. And Clinton, how do they deal with people who are repeating drug addicts and adulterers? They're beheaded. So what you would advocate for others based upon Saudi Arabia, you're not taking a look at to see what this does against people who are of a like mind and follow your own lifestyles or your own personal beliefs. This is the hypocrisy. We cannot any longer use war and armaments and the advice of warmongers to resolve issues. You have to use, as you said, we have to invest in occupying peace and prosperity. If we dealt with the underlying conditions in each of these countries, that the poverty, the lack of jobs, the lack of food, the basic necessities, and the environmental implications of the great droughts, and the instability of daily life. If we help them at that level so that people had a better quality of life, then you're going to have a lot other ways that these radicalists thrive. They thrive just like sugar feeds bacteria in the gut, and that feeds disease. So poverty is being fed by not only having people poor, without hope and unemployed and not having food for themselves or their children, but they're also then bombing them. So they're doubly disadvantaged. If you changed both of those, if we removed all of our military presence, if you stop regime change and you began to bring people together and have the imams do the conciliation, then we have a future. Though there will be opportunists trying to take advantage of this in Machiavellian ways in their own regimes and groups, but in time it could work. And then in the United States, you mentioned rightly so, Gerald, we should we have to de-ghettoize our cities, where we go in there and create, instead of gentrifying it, for the privatization benefits of those who can afford a new business or afford a home in there, but they don't think about what it meant to be a middle-class working citizen there for decades. Now you're swept away because you can't afford water, you can't afford rent, you can't afford anything, you can't afford your credit card, you can't afford to pay the 500 interest on your payday loan, and so you're swamped, and now you can be put into a privatized prison and never get out of debt peonage. We have to stop it. We have to forgive this debt. We have to forgive all student loans. It would be $1 trillion. We forgave $21 trillion. We didn't forgive it. We gave $21 trillion to the Federal Reserve in secret payments to 22 major corporations, including Citigroup, which got $2.3 trillion. Goldman Sachs got $847 billion. And they were able to take their toxic, really bad assets that were worth nothing and wash them through the Federal Reserve as a collateral and taken off their books and put on the American public's books through the Federal Reserve, which disappeared. Why couldn't we take $1 trillion, wipe away all student debt, and if you want to go to a private university, then you pay for it. If you want to go to a state-run school with the same quality education, then that is not going to cost you anything. And that way we can have higher education, we don't have debt peonage, and we allow people to go out into the world and actually start a life, and without having to spend the next 27 years trying to pay it off. So it's depending upon our priorities. Do we care about our youth, our society, our rebuilding America? So if a young person has money in their pocket to spend because they have a college education and you're rebuilding the infrastructure inside of communities, you're giving zero interest loans to small businesses as you did to big banks, but now they have to get 2 employees for every $1 million at a living wage. Now you've just put 12 million people back to work at a living wage. Now people have money to spend at a dry cleaner's or at a restaurant or a bowling alley or a movie theater or a new pair of shoes, where right now they don't have that money. And whatever money they spend, it's on credit. Your thoughts, Gerald?
Oh, you nailed everything, you know, brilliantly, and put it all into context. And, you know, I also want to mention, you know, when you're forecasting trends, it's taking a holistic approach to it. And it's, as I said, all things are connected. And what everyone is doing is they're only doing it in little pieces, which brings me really to the conference we have coming up in Naples, Florida. And it's really a truly holistic approach to trend forecasting, because you can see where we're going and the difficulties that are going to be coming ahead. And again, let no one mistake what's going on here. When all else fails, they take you to war. We're looking at the economy melting down in front of us. It's only been inflated by the trillions that Gary mentioned, plus other trillions from other countries, whether it's coming from Japan, whether it comes from China, from the European Union. And so this thing is going to go down, and there's going to be a lot of destabilization. And that's why I really believe that taking a holistic approach is the only way, by the way, we're going to advance as a society, as a civilization. That's a lot of what this new program we have coming up, a holistic approach to trend forecasting that we're going to be holding in Naples, Florida.
Let me put this in perspective for this audience. that may not have known about this. You and I had a meeting at the program that you put together that we are supporting you in. Ralph Nader is supporting you and Cindy Sheehan is supporting you. Really, progressives in all walks of life are supporting the movement of Occupy Peace and Prosperity and focus upon empowering people individually and collectively. But upstate, it was in Kingston, and I was saying, what you really need, what the people outside want. I was out there speaking with the 1,400 people who were there. Is they said, this is great hearing one speaker after another on this afternoon, but we would love to be able to be in an environment where we could really share ideas and hear from some very wise men and women who have insights and show how we can begin to change our own lives, how we can get off the grid, how we can start to know where can we bank, what investments can we make, where can we, how can we shift our diet, what is the way that we cannot be swept away by some of these tsunamis, financial tsunamis that are coming, environmental tsunamis that are coming in different areas of life? How can we be around more progressive thinking people? And I said, Gerald, this is an opportunity. And Gerald said, let's do something. And that's where Gerald came up with the idea of bringing together some of the finest minds anywhere who see the future, who understand the trends and who are going to provide insights to the problem, more importantly, solid insights of to the solutions. For example, he asked me, would I come down and talk about health and healing, helping to reverse disease naturally, helping to live a more, let's say, integrated life with health, living a longer life. So I said, each night I will do a different lecture, answer questions on how to deal with any problem you have in life. Plus, I'll even do workshops on hydroponics, on organic gardening, on getting off the grid in a lifestyle, because I've done that. I've lived off the grid. I've lived on a farm or ranch my entire adult life. And so this is something that's secondhand to me, and I'm a certified organic farmer and beekeeper, and I teach courses on how to do this. So this way, I'm going to show people, if you want to do something starting in your own backyard, your apartment, you can do it. You're going to go home with tools. They're going to be cooking class to show people how to go from a meat animal-based diet to a plant-based diet. And all the science shows you live a longer, healthier life on a plant-based diet, because you're going to get a gourmet vegan meal every time you eat. And it's going to be done European style, Gerald's way, where you don't just throw all the food on a plate and eat it and then end up with indigestion and blocked arteries and the production of cancer cells and highly acidic diet. You're going to have a very quality, no time limit on eating, generally an hour or more. You're going to have juices all day long, alkalizing juicing all day long, smoothies, protein shakes, personal nutritional counseling with one of the best in the country. You're going to also have personal exercise and power walking and biking and swimming and water aerobics. No matter what your body needs, you'll have someone who will design it personally for you. Additionally, you're going to be able to have meditation classes, classes on yoga every day. You're going to be around beautiful, loving animals, little miniature pot-bellied pigs and little beautiful swans and monkeys and things. And you'll be able to be in a natural environment, a beautiful environment. And so all that is being taken care of. And then Gerald goes to work with his group of speakers and his insights, because it's Gerald's program. This is, Gerald asked me, would I come in and help? So I'm contributing my time because I believe in Gerald's vision and Gerald's message. I wouldn't do this otherwise. I believe that Gerald and the movement that he has created, and he has enlisted those who have spent a lifetime in commitment to making a better world, like Ralph Nader and Professor Robert Thurman at Columbia. We now have a probably in the neighborhood of 2,500 leading thinkers, doers, activists, philosophers, ethicists from all walks of life, economists, who are working together towards a common goal of allowing us to have a way of taking back our society, our lives, our rights constitutionally, and also living a more vital, healthy life. So this is about vitalism starting over. It's the beginning of the year. It'll be a wonderful environment. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to sitting in on the classes that Gerald's going to be teaching and his guest speakers are teaching, but I'm also looking forward to teaching people how to make gourmet desserts without sugar so diabetics can have them, getting more people into raw foods, which I'll show you how to make raw foods, getting people into gardening, showing people how to do hydroponic gardening, and getting them into exercise, meditation, relaxation. So there's never been a conference that I'm aware of where all this is brought together into one single week. So thank you, Gerald, for having the temerity to go forward with this. Please give people the number they can call in and be a part of it. And every retreat I've ever done has been packed. And anyone who's listening to this audience who's listened to my show knows that. So this is a limited number. I told Gerald to make it successful. You can't get too many people. There's a right number of people. So everybody gets personal attention where they feel a sense of intimacy with the environment. And he agreed. So we're not going to have 1,400 people there. The goal might be maximum 50. So give a call now. Gerald, do you want to give that number, please?
Yes, it's 845-331-3500, 845-331-3500, and ask to speak to Miss Clark. And really, as we say, you know, the trend is your friend. And this is going to be not only life-changing, but it's going to be changing life. Because
absolutely.
It's up to us to do it, and it's up to you.
And give them the dates, please.
Just threw a blank on it. What are the dates?
Gerald's been 100% accurate. Everything he's predicted except the date.
Funny. It's in January.
It's mid-January.
Middle of January.
It's the second week of January.
It's 845-331-3500. And again, there's nothing like this anywhere, any place, any time. It's a once-in-a-lifetime. And it's going to be life-changing, as I said, because people ask me, what can I do? I said, you have to do anything, you have to get in shape, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And you have to get on trend. And that's what this is going to do.
It's all interconnected. And this is the first time all of it has been presented, from everything in your economics, the politics, third-party candidates, everything is going to be discussed that Gerald talks about each week on this radio show and in his Trends Journal, plus all the things that I talk about. Give a call. One last time on the number, Gerald.
845-331-3500. Ask to speak to Ms. Clark. It's going to be this coming January. I believe it's the last week of January, third week of January. And in beautiful Orlando, in a place that, boy, it's heaven on earth.
Okay. Gerald Celente. Thank you, Gerald.
Thank you, Gary. And thank you, everyone. So that's it for today, and that's Trends This Week. Stay on top of the trends and ahead of the news. Also, go to trendsresearch.com for more information about the journal and the conference. Sit down, you'll be shallow, eat the